Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thank you for joining us on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live, the Monday edition, here on 101.3 KPCG. We're online, kpcg.fm. We have a live link at thetrumpet.com as well. Great place to listen to us. A lot coming up in today's program, some headlines. Also, some interesting things that have happened on this day in history. We'll look at a list of those and lots of other great stuff coming up next on Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Welcome back to Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG in the Edmond, Oklahoma City area. If you're online, where a lot of our listeners are, thanks for joining us at kpcg.fm. Live link at thetrumpet.com as well. If you'd like to listen using the TuneIn app, that's a great way to do it. You can get that on your smart device of your choice and just search for KPCG and stream it live wherever you're going. You can plug it into your car, which is kind of neat when you're driving around, or headphones if you're doing things around the house, however you want to do it. Great way to listen to us, and we appreciate you listening all over the world. A lot of listeners online at various locations. I'm Dwight Falk. Grant Turgeon traveling today, not with us, but he'll be back tomorrow. And so it's just you and me. You and me today, the listener. I appreciate you being here and looking forward to a lot of interesting conversation on this program. One of the interesting headlines, this is from Fox News. The White House denies Jerusalem is in Israel. And that was talked about recently on the Trumpet Daily radio show. Brent Nachtigall was filling in. And he mentioned that, how the White House has sort of a unique policy in regards to Jerusalem, where they'll say that they're not actually in Israel. Of course, there's a lot of contention there with that city. And this write-up from Fox News says the White House forgot its own policy on Jerusalem Friday, at least temporarily. The administration initially sent out a copy of President Barack Obama's remarks at former Israeli Prime Minister Shimon Peres's funeral in Jerusalem, indicating that the remarks had been given in Jerusalem, Israel. But later Friday afternoon, the press office sent out a correction to the previous email, striking Israel from the header of the transcript. And so that shows the thinking there of the White House. And really, kind of, they caught themselves, I guess, because they know that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. Everybody knows that. But they don't want to admit to that. And so they sent out this brief talking about the president's remarks, and initially said it was from Jerusalem, Israel, and then said it was just from Jerusalem. So kind of interesting. Brent Nachtigall talked about that somewhat on the Trumpet Daily radio show last week, just the U.S.'s policy towards Israel, towards Jerusalem over the last 8 years and then even further back than that. And here is just another illustration of how the U.S., at least the current administration, is trying to deny that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel, because obviously they're wanting to support the Palestinians in a lot of ways there as well. So kind of an interesting headline there. Sometimes I guess it's hard for everybody in the administration to keep everything straight as far as what they're saying publicly. But in this case, they made an error in their minds and then corrected it. Here's another interesting story. This one is from The Telegraph. And we've talked over the last, I guess, few weeks on and off here on Trumpet Radio Live about some of the funny, I guess, or I don't know if funny is the right word, but strange courses that are offered at different universities. And a lot of cases, there's just not value to them. And here's another example of a university course that not only is not valuable, it's actually very destructive. Headline is, U.S. University offers course for men to, quote, deconstruct toxic masculinities. So if you want to take a class on how to, I guess, not be masculine anymore, this would be the one. A university in the United States has begun offering classes in constructive male allyship, providing a space where male students are able to, quote, question and deconstruct toxic masculinities. This is at Duke University. Good basketball team out there at Duke, but maybe the basketball team will take it. We'll see how well they play after this course. But it's in Duke University, which is based in the city of Durham, North Carolina. They held their first learning community session last week. The Women's Center has organized a 9-week series of seminars as part of the Duke Men's Project. And with the sexual harassment and sexism remaining hot topics on American university campuses, the university has created the seminar series under the banner of the Men's Project. So they're trying to have a response to what they feel are some important issues there at the campuses, talking about sexual harassment, sexism, and so forth get brought up, I guess, a lot at universities. They say our purpose is twofold: to foster constructive male allyship and to question and deconstruct toxic masculinities, as they call it. That's what the Men's Project says on its website. They say we also understand how masculinity in its normative form alienates most, if not all, men, and recognize the part normative masculinity plays in alienating men and reproducing violence. We want to deconstruct toxic masculinities to reconstruct healthier, more inclusive notions of masculinity. The 9-week course aims to promote unlearning violence. So the idea here is that if someone were to be considered masculine, they would also be violent in some form, at least according to this this write-up. The organizers say we want to explore, dissect, and construct an intersectional understanding of masculinity and maleness, as well as to create destabilizing spaces for those with privilege. So I think you'd have to really sit down and break those sentences apart. They're pretty convoluted in their meaning, I think. Duke's Women's Center opened the Men's Project in the spring, and since then has held talks by sociologists on sex, power, and violence, and screened films about pornography. So they're getting into all kinds of really some pretty bad subjects there in this course. And, you know, whenever they get away from looking at what the Bible says, what God's definition of masculinity and femininity is, then things get crazy. Things get so murky and so messed up. And so they want to deconstruct what they feel is negative about masculinity, but they have no basis for it. There's no basis for them to even get into something like this. The Bible is quite clear about the roles of men and women, how they should act towards each other. And nowhere in the Bible is violence condoned in any way in terms of a man towards a woman or something like that. So, but they're just going off on their own here. And so you start getting into some pretty ridiculous classes. Duke, they say, is an environment where some are rarely made uncomfortable, while others are made to bear the weight of their identities on a daily basis. And we aim to flip that paradigm. That's an interesting statement. People are made to bear the weight of their identities. Well, just interesting. I guess people aren't comfortable in their own situation. The project has been backed by the student newspaper's editorial board. They insisted it was not a re-education camp being administered by an oppressed group in the service of the feminization of American society. And so they're trying to defend what they're doing there on some level. But again, this is just an attack on the role of the man. Now, men should not be violent towards anybody, particularly women, but this is something that they're pushing. They already are starting from the premise that masculinity in some form is violent and toxic. And that, again, is not accurate. Of course, people can make a lot of mistakes in life, but that doesn't mean that because a certain several may be involved in violent behavior, that's a masculine trait. It is not. And the Bible's quite clear on that. But again, once you get away from that, once you get away from any type of law, any sort of foundation for belief, what are you left with? Just ideas that float around out there. And these are some of the classes that they're teaching at some of the most prestigious universities in America. Duke is a very prestigious university. And again, they're having this course for men to deconstruct toxic masculinities. Well, it'd be interesting to see what their idea of a proper masculinity is. I don't think it would square with God's definition in the Bible, but that's one of the classes there at Duke University. Here's another unfortunate headline. This is from the New York Times. The title is, "They Keep Finding Bodies. Gang Violence in Long Island Town Fuels Immigration Debate." They're having violence, and a lot of it's getting back to some of the immigration problems here in the United States. This is from Brentwood, New York. Four teenagers dead, 2 weeks, one town, and a ruthless gang, the authorities say, was most likely responsible for the death toll. Again, so this isn't the first time this has happened. On September 13th, Nisa Mickens, 15, and her best friend Kayla, who are 16, were murdered. They were found near an elementary school a week later and just 2 miles away. They found more teenagers. They give the names there, 19 and 15. They were found in the woods near a psychiatric hospital. And some of them had been missing for quite a few months. The deaths have been ruled homicides. Brentwood, they say, is a hardscrabble town of nearly 60,000 on Long Island, 40 miles east of Manhattan. And they've reached another crisis point for nearly two decades. MS-13, which is a really rough gang, if you've ever heard of them, a gang with roots in Los Angeles and El Salvador, has been terrorizing the town, the authorities say, especially its young people. Since 2009, its members have been accused of at least 14 murders, court and police records show. School officials are scrambling, police officers are searching, students are frightened, and parents are anguished. "It's so hard, I'm hurting," Kayla's mother said. That's one of the teenagers that was killed. She said, "I wish I could hold my daughter again." That's the sentiment that I think every parent would have in a terrible situation like this. But again, not a lot of solutions are being offered. In her first interview since Kayla's funeral, Ms. Rodriguez spoke measuredly about how her daughter had been bullied by gang members inside and outside her high school. "To me," she said, "it's worse than it was before. It's everywhere." She's a 1987 graduate of Brentwood Ross High School, where her daughter was a student. "This is ridiculous," she added. "We need some type of assistance to help our police officers here and see if they can come together to figure out a plan to make things better for the kids now." So here you have the other side of, let's say, the police debate that's out there. There's all this debate about police brutality and violence. But now they need the police, too, to help them protect the children from these ruthless gangs. And officers, they have to deal with this all the time, depending on where they're located, of course. And so when they go to a call of some kind, how are they to know if it's a gang member that's going to kill a teenager, or if it's, you know, just somebody that with a traffic violation or something? They don't know in a lot of cases. And so they have to be very wary, and any sort of aggressive behavior, you know, you have to think, what would you do if you were a police officer? What would I do if there was aggressive behavior and I didn't know what the situation was, and I had to deal with these gangs and this gang violence all the time? I mean, I think we can all feel for the predicament that they're in there with the police. But so you're seeing some of these gang problems. And again, this particular gang that they're highlighting here, MS-13, for the most part is import. They're not normally from the States. I suppose they could pull in members from a lot of different places and ethnicities. But El Salvador, they come up through the border, southern border, often involved in drugs and a lot of violence. The path to such a plan, this article says, you know, having more police there to try to help, runs through a fractured Suffolk County where the town's located. Its former police chief is headed to jail. Its district attorney is under federal investigation, and a Justice Department settlement mandated changes in the police department in 2013 after findings of bias against Latino residents. So here you go. There's this bias, they say, against Latino residents. But in a lot of cases, these Latino residents have been members or are members of a deadly gang. So they say you can't be biased against them. And a lot of the pictures that they show of these gang members, it wouldn't be a mystery, you know, to see them and think, oh, I wonder if they're in a gang or not. Full of tattoos, dressing the part, I guess you could say, acting as a gang member would, I suppose. And the police have been trying to crack down on it, but nope, they can't do it anymore the way they wanted to because of what? Justice Department settlement and federal investigation. That happened in 2013. That's 3 years ago. So what's happened between now and then? Is it better? Are the problems solved? Or are children being murdered? Well, children are being murdered. Those gangs aren't interested in racial equality. They'll kill anybody if they get in their way or, you know, they feel there's a reason to do so. That's the difficulty. That's the difficulty on the ground here in the United States in a lot of communities. And it's the same in Europe if you look at the immigration crisis there. And on one hand, people are saying, well, you can't discriminate or have a bias. But on the other hand, there's a lot of violence coming out of those sectors. So it's a tough situation for the police. And the ones that are suffering are the residents and the children. If the police aren't going to enforce the law, if they're so worried about federal investigation that they can't enforce the law, what do you have? You have a town like this in New Jersey where the gangs run rampant and they're burying the children. Very difficult. Very difficult situation. It says, tensions simmer here because some residents say they believe an increase in Central American migrants to town has led to the increase in gang violence. According to 2014 census figures compiled by Queens College, Brentwood's population is 68% Latino or Hispanic, with more than 17,000 residents claiming to be from El Salvador. Timothy Sinney, who became the Suffolk County Police Commissioner 11 months ago, so that's a tough job to step into, after his predecessor, James Burke, pleaded guilty to civil rights violations and obstruction of justice, has vowed to eradicate the gangs. That's going to be a difficult thing to do, but at least they're trying something. The only people in Brentwood who have anything to fear are the criminals, Mr. Sinai said. That's because there is a tsunami of law enforcement officers at their doorsteps. Well, that's tough talk, and I mean, hopefully that's the case. But it hasn't been a successful fight against these gangs in most cases. But he makes a really good point. He says the only ones that have anything to fear are the criminals. And that's really the truth, isn't it? I mean, if a person's a law-abiding citizen, they don't have anything to fear because they're keeping the law. But the criminals do have something to fear because they are breaking the law. But the law has to be enforced, and that's the difficulty that some of these towns are facing. The department there in this New Jersey town in Brentwood, they have increased uniform patrols, door-to-door canvassing, and rejoined the 8-member Long Island Gang Task Force of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Mr. Sinai said he met recently with dozens of agencies, including Homeland Security Investigations and the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. It's not a good time to be a gang member in Brentwood, he said. One gang member was arrested and was in federal custody for questioning, the police chief added. Although a motive for the murders was still unclear, and the FBI confirmed it was assisting the police. So they're trying to find out who murdered some of these teenagers. But again, it's a problem there in this community. And a lot of it gets back to immigration and, the accusations of racial profiling. Very difficult time to be a police officer in this community or a lot of communities in the United States. The Brentwood School District held a community forum last month with elected officials and parents that ran for 4 hours trying to get to the bottom of some of these problems, how to solve them. And according to Ms. Rodriguez, school officials said some students had been red flagged for having possible gang affiliations. She said, if they're red flagged, why are they in school? Kids are being targeted. They're trying to find some type of safe way to even go to school. Being in school, they always have to look over their shoulder to see who's walking. Can you imagine that? How terrifying that would be? You know, I don't know about your personal experience, but for myself, going to school, I didn't have to deal with any sort of major gang activity like this. But occasionally there'd be a threat of violence. You know, kids were going to fight or something was going to happen. And if that ever came your way or was you were in the vicinity of that, that's scary. That's really scary. It's hard to focus on school when you're worried about fights. And in this case, it's a lot more serious than the maybe occasional fist fight that would happen. This is gang activity, and this is young people being killed. Horrible situation. Brentwood has 4,400 high school students divided into two schools, and administrators say the environment is safe. Although, of course, doesn't appear the students always feel that way. They say gang members rarely present themselves in the schools. If they do, we take care of that pretty quickly. So, bad situation also for the administrators, having to deal with gang members in the schools, because those gangs, they usually remember, you know, who caused them trouble, and they usually are pretty vengeful. Very difficult situation there. And they say, the school officials say, we can't exclude a kid because we suspect they are in a gang. That's state and federal law that they are entitled to an education. So here again, look at that. They suspect some of these kids are in gangs, but because they don't have the exact hard evidence, they can't keep them from going to school. And in some ways that's good, because if they're not in gangs, they should be allowed to go to school. But they, you know, have pretty good indication that some of them are, and yet they can't do anything about it. So a lot of times I think those gang members or the criminal element, they know that, and they'll play the system against itself. And so here you have kids going to school that they know are probably in gangs, and yet they can't do anything about it. They said even before the girls' murders that happened earlier, students were subject to random screenings with metal detectors, which have increased over the past few weeks. There are no detectors at the entrances of either high school, however. So going through metal detectors in school, it's like being in a jail almost. Some parents are concerned that the school's response to the violence was not proactive enough. Levi McIntyre, the school superintendent, sent an email to parents warning their children not to wear certain colors that are identified with this particular gang, MS-13, or clothes displaying the Salvadorian flag, which is another indication. A student on the way to school, the administrator wrote, recently had his shirt torn off by gang members and burned because he was wearing the wrong color. It's a very difficult situation for these students. This gang, MS-13, was formed in Los Angeles in the 1980s by immigrants from El Salvador trying to escape the civil war down there. The abbreviation stands for Mara Salvatruca, which roughly translates to Salvadorian Street Posse. The authorities say the gang has been in Suffolk County since around 1998 and is organized in cliques bearing names like the Brentwood Locos, Salvatrucas. Leaders gather to discuss their line of business, extortion, prostitution, robbery, drug dealing, and to authorize the killings of members of rival gangs, like the Bloods and the Crips, court papers say. So these are gang battles raging on some of these city streets where kids are trying to go to school. It's not a great picture, is it? For those that listen often to KPCG and visit thetrumpet.com and read the free literature, you do know a much, much better time is coming, and a time that's going to see an end to this type of thing. That's what the Bible prophesies, and that's the hope at the end of this, because this is a really depressing story. I mean, it's what hope is there, but it does highlight how bad things are in certain areas, and it does highlight just the challenge that the police are facing, because they're trying to keep people safe, and yet in some ways their hands are tied more and more, especially with the so much of the focal or so much focus on them and what they're doing and how they're handling, especially minorities. But the thing is, if the police aren't very active or aren't able to be active, what do you have? Well, you have this, which is a gang from El Salvador going and killing gangs that are African American, killing gangs that are, you know, name it. There's all kinds of different gangs out there, and they attack each other and they kill each other. You know, the police aren't the problem. You know, gang violence, that's one of the big problems that's out there. But thankfully, that time is coming to an end very quickly, and you can read a lot more about that at thetrumpet.com. There's a great, great book for this time of the year especially, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, written by Herbert W. Armstrong. It goes through and he looks at what the world's going to be like after Christ returns. And that's a tremendous thing to think about and to be excited about. And the first chapter talks about one last look at this world. One last look. And, you know, he wrote that back in the 1980s when things were certainly bad, but they're far worse today. One last look back at the world. And so sometimes, you know, we do have to stop and take these last looks back at what this world is doing. You know, if you feel for the people that live in this community in Brentwood and anybody that is in a situation like that. You know, kids should go to school, should try to learn. They should be thinking about, you know, what do I want to be when I get older instead of, you know, can I survive today? It's a terrible situation here in some of the areas in the U.S., one of the most blessed nations on earth, and yet all of this violence. There's more there written. I think that's the main gist of the write-up, though. It's at the New York Times. They keep finding bodies. Gang violence in Long Island town fuels immigration debate. And again, keep in mind, this not only the police situation, but you have to think about the immigration policy in the United States. People are pouring across the border oftentimes, released into public. They don't know who they are. They don't know where they're going and what they're going to do. Some cases, it might be fine, but in a lot of cases, it's not. And you have situations like this, gang violence, gang activity. And, you know, the politicians can say whatever they want, but who's going to bring these kids back to the parents, to the mother who says, I just want to hold my daughter one more time? She can't. She's dead. And it's a hard, cold reality on the streets in some of these cities. And so it's interesting because here we are in this political cycle and we have two politicians yelling at each other and debating all sorts of things. How are they going to solve the gang problems in the cities? I'd like to hear that question asked. How are they going to solve the gang problems? How are they going to solve the immigration problems? How are they going to heal the racial divide? How are they going to empower the police but make sure the police are just? How are they going to do those things? Well, I think those questions don't get asked because there aren't any answers. There might be some platitudes, I suppose, but there aren't any answers for those things. Not in this system, not in this society. That's why you need to read The Wonderful World Tomorrow. It's free. I'd get it right now, or you can download it at thetrumpet.com or just read through it and take that one last look at this world today. Think about these headlines and then think about and read about from your Bible, you know, highlighted in that book, The Wonderful World Tomorrow. Think about how good it's going to be and how there is going to be real solutions to the problems that we do see around us today. You're listening to Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3. We're KPCG. And we're online at kpcg.fm.
We'll be right back to Trumpet Radio Live.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Trumpet Radio Live. We are on 101.3 KPCG. We have a live link at thetrumpet.com. And you can follow us on Twitter if you'd like to, at KPCGFM. We'll send out some tweets about programming that you probably are interested in. And also, you can send us any emails, questions, comments, concerns, anything you'd like to comments at kpcg.fm. Thanks for joining us here on this Monday. I am Dwight Falk. Grant Turgeon is traveling today, so we will be talking to him again tomorrow. And so it's just you and I today. We'll hold down the fort together. Here's some things that have happened on this day in history. October the 3rd, we haven't talked about those in a while. Thought it'd be interesting to look at some of the events of this day, some of them a little older and some more modern, of course, that we probably all remember. On this day in 2333 BC, modern-day Korea was founded by Dagon Wang Yeom. Probably didn't get that one right, but that's my attempt at the name, during the reign of Chinese Emperor Yao. So that was in 2333 BC, just a few years before I came on the scene. 52 BC on this day. The leader of the Gauls surrendered to the Romans under Julius Caesar, ending the siege and Battle of Alesia. Those that are into that Roman history probably know a great deal about that. 1283, also on this day, the prince of Gwynedd, Dyad ap Gruffydd, he was the prince of Wales there, becomes the first person executed by being hanged, drawn, and quartered. Not a great thing to have behind your name, I guess, as far as history is concerned. Not a good. I hope they did it in that order. It'd be better to be hanged and then drawn and quartered, I suppose. Not too pleasant to think about there. But apparently, he was the first, at least the first one that is recorded historically. 1906 on this day, SOS was adopted as warning signal by the first conference on wireless telegraphy. And, of course, SOS is, I guess, very famous for that. I think we all know of that as the emergency signal. And sometimes when people are stranded on islands, they'll mark that out on the sand and rocks or something. Either that or help. I guess either one, people kind of know to go and check and see what happens. 1990 on this day, reunification of East and West Germany. West German flag was raised above the Brandenburg Gate on the stroke of midnight. Huge, huge event. A really good book to go back and get is He Was Right. That's free at thetrumpet.com as well as all of our literature is. And it talks about the prophecies of Herbert W. Armstrong. He talked for many years, even in the midst of World War II, about Germany reuniting again. East and West Germany at the time when he made those predictions based on Bible prophecy, that seemed like a real stretch to people. Because they were in ruins. Germany was absolutely decimated. And, you know, there was a lot of emphasis put on not letting Germany reunify, not letting them rearm. Russia was in charge there in East Germany, a lot of communism going on there. West Germany was, of course, more Western, obviously, so they had a better life. But that wall did come down. 1990, on this day, October 3rd, has the official reunification. Pretty big day if you think about it. So pretty amazing that happened right on this day. What was that? That was 26 years ago? Time flies. I remember that. I think a lot of our listeners do too. 1995 on this day. This was a big one here in the U.S., not as big as the reunifying of Germany, but still big here, especially with race relations in the United States. 1995 on this day, O.J. Simpson found not guilty of the murder of Nicole Simpson and Ron Goldman in Los Angeles, California. There was a lot of pressure there on those making that decision because we had seen race riots just a few years earlier because of the Rodney King situation. And so that I think there was a lot of pressure there. Whether or not they made the right decision, don't know, but there certainly was pressure. And I think everyone remembers just how tense some of that was because of the racial relations in the United States. And, of course, has it gotten better since 1995? All these years later, is it any better? I don't think so. I would think we could pretty safely say that it has gotten worse, especially in the recent year or so, with the police and the way that they're being really demonized in the press and watched like a hawk by everybody and being accused. And then even in the debate a couple weeks ago, there was the accusations from one candidate to the other about racism. And so that just gets people very stirred up. That's a very emotional topic. And again, we've seen that building here over the last really several decades. But in 1995 on this day, O.J. Simpson found not guilty of the murder of Nicole Simpson and Ron Goldman in Los Angeles, California. That was a huge deal. And I think a lot of you remember that as well, as I do. Those are some of the things that have happened on this day, October the 3rd. And, of course, a lot of important events, but that big one especially, 1990, the reunification of East and West Germany. It's not a bad idea if you get a chance to go back and look at some of that history and some of the prophecy concerning Germany and where they're headed today. So good to go back and check thetrumpet.com for more details on that. Speaking of Germany, they're having, of course, problems with the migrants that are coming in. And getting to be more heated, more violent all the time. This is a new update here from just, I guess it was Sunday. It says, police say several people have been injured after fights between locals and migrants in three towns in eastern Germany. In the first incident late Friday, a group of German youths used clubs and pepper spray against a group of Syrians who threw stones at them at a refugee shelter in the town of Sangerhausen, 200 kilometers, 124 miles southwest of Berlin. In Bautzen, near Germany's eastern border with Poland, a 17-year-old Syrian threatened a 39-year-old German man. Police said Saturday that the minor injured himself and was taken to the hospital. The town hit headlines last month following a series of fights between residents and migrants. The third incident late Friday, police had to separate a group of 30 locals who attacked 10 migrants in the northern German town of Schwerin. So this, of course, was in the news a while ago. There was a pretty big fight, I guess, that broke out. These are a few new incidents that have happened here recently just over the weekend. And so they're, you know, it's not a lot of people necessarily, but it does highlight that there is tension between the refugees, the immigrants, and the locals in some of those German areas. It's just been something that's building. And so it'll be interesting to see how it goes. Angela Merkel, of course, has come under a lot of fire for a variety of things, but I suppose the immigration crisis would be the biggest issue. And it does give some insight, I think, into just the thinking of the German people. Not that this is indicative of every single person, of course, but you see a few more of these things happening, and sometimes these events, they kind of build on themselves. You know, there's one fight, then another, and another, and another, and it kind of builds up, and unfortunately that does happen. So it'll be interesting to see what occurs. They're in Germany. The Bible's very clear on the fact that there is a battle coming between the King of the North and the King of the South. If you don't know who those groups are, a lot of great write-ups at thetrumpet.com. You can get all that information. We're not going to get into any of that here, but you can certainly read about that, understand what's going on there, and know where it's headed, too. And so you see headlines like this, and it's not that these particular headlines are necessarily some major event, but they are leading to bigger events, and it is stirring up the animosity that is there in Germany between the locals and those coming in. And you know, in some ways, I suppose we could all understand why there'd be some animosity. I mean, they have been attacked there in their homeland a few times, but we know there's going to be more of that. It's two different cultures, two different ideologies. They're very different. And you know, some reports have said, what the Germans have said, well, if you want to come here, you have to be German. You have to assimilate. And so a lot of the people coming in don't want to assimilate. They want to keep their own culture, their own ideas. And that's not something that is going on very, very well, or those events aren't leading to good things there in Germany. So interesting. Make sure that you you check out, you know, more headlines about that at thetrumpet.com, what's happening in Germany, what has happened, and what you can expect to see happen here in the future. You know, and for those of us in the United States, it'd be easy to think like, well, that's over in Europe. But if you know more about that situation, you know that it will affect the United States quite a bit. Another thing that's affecting the United States is the internet, where a lot of our listeners are online at kpcg.fm. And there's a lot of bad on the internet, but there's a lot that you can do with it that's good, too. U.S. government is not having oversight anymore, though. This is from the AFP. The U.S. government on Saturday ended its formal oversight role over the internet, handing over management of the online address system to a global nonprofit entity. Richard Palmer talked about that somewhat on the Trumpet Hour Week in Review, I think, several weeks back. You can check the archives and go through the synopsis. It'll show you where that is, and explained it pretty well as to what this body does. I mean, they have to assign names to the numbers so that we don't have to search by this long list of numbers. We can just, you know, type in thetrumpet.com and you get there. So this is really an important thing. The U.S. Commerce Department, it says, announced that its contract had expired with the Internet Corporation for assigned names and numbers, which manages the Internet's so-called root zone. That leaves ICANN, I-C-A-N-N, as a self-regulating organization that will be operated by the Internet's stakeholders, engineers, academics, businesses, non-government, and government groups. Who's in control? That's a good question, and it'll be interesting to see what happens. The move is part of a decades-old plan by the U.S. to, quote, privatize the internet, and backers have said it would help maintain its integrity around the world. We'll see about that. U.S. and ICANN officials have said the contract had given Washington a symbolic role as overseer of the internet's root zone, where new online domains and addresses are created, but critics, including some U.S. lawmakers, argued that this was a giveaway by Washington that could allow authoritarian regimes to seize control. Think about the UN and some of the stuff you hear coming out of the UN. You have rogue regimes, violent regimes they have a voice in the international community of the UN. Do we want them to have a voice as to what goes on the internet? I think that is a power we probably would like to keep here in the U.S. in most cases, but no longer is that the case. A last-ditch effort by critics to block the plan, a lawsuit filed by four U.S. states, failed when a Texas federal judge refused to issue an injunction to stop the transition. I just think sometimes with those judges, I just stop and think, well, who do they think they are? And they think they have infinite wisdom? Maybe they should rethink some of these things a little bit. This seems like a bad idea for the United States. As of October 1st, 2016, which was on Saturday, the IANA functions contract has expired, he said. That was Lawrence Strickling. He heads the Commerce Department unit, which managed those functions. Stephen Crocker, ICANN's board chairman and one of the engineers who developed the early internet protocols, welcomed the end of the contract, though. He said this transition was envisioned 18 years ago, yet it was the tireless work of the global internet community, that sounds ominous, which drafted the final proposal that made this a reality. So what will happen to the internet? Who knows? Maybe something, maybe nothing. But it is, I think, something to keep your eye on because the U.S. had control of it to some extent and now no longer does. So another surrender, another area of surrender by the U.S. Will it be a big deal or won't it? We'll find out. But certainly doesn't show any sort of strength or power coming out of the U.S. on that situation. Make sure you do listen for the Key of David program coming up here in a bit on KPCG. Also, Trumpet Daily Radio Show today, Richard Palmer doing part of it, and also some other content on there as well. We have a new Just the Best Literature today. Make sure you listen for that with your host, Dennis Leap. And then we have Music for Life with your host, Ryan Malone. Lots of great programming coming up here today on KPCG. As always, the archives are online at kpcg.fm, and of course, the live link there at thetrumpet.com. Know a lot of people are traveling today on this Monday, and so hopefully you're able to listen to us when you're on the road. For those that are listening online, we appreciate you there and over the air at 101.3 KPCG. That'll do it for us today on Trumpet Radio Live. And by us, I mean the listener and me, because Grant Turgeon not with us today, but he'll be back with us on Tuesday. Thanks for spending some time with me. Have a great rest of your day. And we'll see you back here tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.